Welcome back to the Balanced Pursuit podcast. Today, I'm so excited because I'm joined by Hannah from The Style Audit. She's a former self-proclaimed broke shopaholic who's now helping thousands take control of their spending and style. We dove into her journey of using shopping as a coping mechanism, the turning point that sparked real change, and how she built a healthier relationship with money and her wardrobe. She shares practical tips for resisting sales, navigating trends, and making intentional purchases. Plus, we chat about the genius behind her wardrobe wishlist tracker and how she's built a community rooted in mindful spending. If you've ever felt stuck in a cycle of impulse shopping, then this episode is for you.
It's going great.
Good. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast here today so we can chat about like all things money and fashion and trends. Yes. And all the good stuff that you obviously know a lot about.
I'm so excited to be here and it's a pinch me moment, honestly.
I'm so excited. Well, I would love to kind of kick this off anyway by you letting my listeners know about who you are.
So my name is Hannah, as you know, and I create content and sell products and run a program all around how to stop being a shopaholic. Mm-hmm. So a bit of background about me. I was a shopaholic basically throughout my whole 20s. It kind of started when I was in high school, mostly with like thrifting. So nothing super consequential or damaging to my finances.
I was a pretty good shopaholic.
Well, yeah, I didn't really have money in high school to be able to shop for too expensive of purchases. But when I went off to university, got my first credit card, it really started to ramp up. And I think with the rise of social media, something we all can relate to is consumerism really changing and, you know, influencer culture. This was when like beauty YouTubers were a really big thing. And I think all of that accompanied with like having more independence and having a credit card and not really having the education around how to use that responsibly contributed to my vision of what was normal in terms of spending and shopping to become really skewed, which I think that in our society, it's kind of become skewed for everyone. But, and you know, I loved clothes and fashion since I was a kid. So it was just naturally something I gravitated towards, and having that external norm and the financial means to be able to do that really contributed to that becoming kind of a, not an obsession, but a damaging habit or like a compulsive habit that I didn't really know how to navigate responsibly.
Yeah. Did you find that like, did that shopping habit, obviously like social media had a big part of it too, but in your career, is that something that kind of made it not maybe worse? Like I find that a lot of people when they go into a career, whether it be a 9-to-5 into a job and they're wanting to look good against their coworkers and stuff like that. Like, did you have that kind of pressure at all?
Yeah. I mean, I worked in kind of retail stores and the mall, like throughout university, just when I was younger, and being constantly surrounded by stores, people shopping all the time, like having the pressure to look a certain way or keep up with, you know, the trends or what was in at the time definitely added to that.
Yeah. I feel like being around malls is like a huge thing. Cause I feel like anytime, like I'm thinking back into my 20s, like I've worked at Nordstrom when that still was a thing, Holt Renfrew, and like you would go into the food court because I was terrible with my money and I would never bring my lunch, but you would always be around stores all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the worst environment for a shopaholic to be in every single day. So yeah, 100%. And I think that I viewed my like passion and interest in clothes and fashion as almost not even an excuse, but it felt like shopping was almost a necessary aspect of that being an interest of mine, or I didn't know how to get enjoyment out of that without constantly buying stuff. And we'll get into it a bit more, but I think shopping your closet and finding ways to style what you already have and becoming more engaged with your clothes in that way really is the antidote and will actually result in you getting a lot more fulfillment out of clothes 100%. Than constantly buying new things. So
for sure. I find that something I talk to a lot of people about, especially during my one-on-one calls that I do, a lot of people turn to shopping or usually another big expense is eating out as like a coping mechanism. Do you find that that was something that was an apparent thing for you?
Honestly, I don't feel like there was any other categories that were a huge issue for me. I mean, I wasn't that intentional with my spending in general in my early 20s, as I'm sure most of us can relate to. Yeah. But it really was like because of how much I loved clothes and like got fulfillment out of that.
Yeah.
That really was my vice. But I mean, I do see in the people I work with that there tends to be other categories that are problems for them, like whether it's like makeup, skincare, beauty is a big one.
Yeah,
takeout and like food delivery is a huge one because it's so accessible nowadays.
Yeah,
and I think that's really the key of why this becomes such a big problem for people is just how easy it is to spend money on things we don't need.
It's so different, like because we're the same age, I'm pretty sure, and like how we grew up with social media, I feel like we definitely grew up with it in the sense of like Facebook became a thing and then Instagram became a thing. And like, I remember when I graduated high school, like Instagram just started like that kind of thing, or I think it was maybe around for a little bit, but now in today's world, like social media is just, it's so present, especially in like the younger kids. And like, it's just so involved all the time. Like I genuinely could not imagine being like 20 now than what I was like 10 years ago. Like it's crazy. Like it's just completely changed.
Yeah. And it scares me a little bit for this younger generation because most of the people I work with are between the ages of like 30 to 50, I would say. But it does make me worried for this younger generation that's growing up like on social media and you know, we don't have TikTok shop in Canada, which I'm really grateful for, but a lot of people talk to me about that being a really big issue for them. And just seeing this whole influencer culture kind of take over and our view of what is normal becomes so skewed. Like I was saying, it's like keeping up with the Joneses, but it's like in our phones and it's that girl next door that seems like she's so much like you, but really she's being sent all these packages all the time. So
100%. So I guess like in terms of like your own experience when it comes to shopping, like did you have a specific turning point? Like was there something that happened that made you realize that things are out of control and like, I need to get my shit together basically.
I think I always knew from the point when I started to accumulate credit card debt, like in my early 20s from it, I always knew that it wasn't normal. Like my other friends didn't shop like that.
Okay.
I knew that it was a problem that I needed to try to curb, but it didn't get to the point of me realizing it was such a serious problem probably until I started to feel shame and resistance around sharing the details of it with my partner. I got engaged a couple years ago and he knew that I shopped a lot and that it was something that I was trying to be better about. But I knew when I was like resistant to like tell him how much credit card debt I had or like be honest about how many, like what I was buying, that it was like, okay, this is starting to affect other people. It's starting to affect the person that I'm showing up as in other areas of my life. And that was really when I started to treat it as a real problem that I needed to address, as opposed to just something I needed to work on casually, if that makes sense.
So it was almost like, not necessarily like that he was the person for you, that like, it was not necessarily a light switch, but like similar to me, like when I was in my early 20s and I was horrible with my money, credit card debt and all that good stuff. And it took me meeting Andrew, my now fiance, where I was like, I kind of started envisioning like a bigger life. And I was like, okay, like the decisions I make impact this person too. So it wasn't just him obviously making that like change for me, but I feel like it had a huge impact actually like meeting that person. I'm curious to hear like, Do you know what kind of conversations you started having with him? Like, how would you recommend someone maybe have, like, how do you start that conversation with a significant other if you are in that space that you were in?
I think that there is no, in a way, there's no beating around the bush. Like, at a certain point, it just gets to the point where you have to rip off the Band-Aid and you have to be upfront about it. But I think I did kind of drip the reality of it a little bit slowly. Like I had said that I had credit card debt that I had built up in my early 20s and that I was trying to shop less. And he knew that that was something that I was working on, but it took me deciding to actually address it head on to be upfront about like how much credit card debt there actually was. And I think part of that is also when you start to talk about being more transparent about your finances with someone else in a relationship, like talking about important. Combining your finances yeah. and getting married and stuff like that. It's something you have to do. And, mm-hmm. But I mean, I work with people who are married, have been married for a long time and are hiding credit cards yeah. from their partner and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And it really is hard to be open about, but there's no, like the only way to do it you is to rip the Band-Aid off yeah. and go into the conversation with the intention of being honest, being vulnerable, mm-hmm. showcasing your commitment to changing and asking that other person to be a support for you and knowing what kind of support that you want.
Yeah, that's yeah. awesome. I feel you. I'm everything that you're saying, I completely align with. And I think it's so important to have this conversation as early as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like you mentioned, like, and I see it too. I see people who are deep into relationships and they're terrified to have these conversations with their significant other, which is incredibly damaging, not just to yourself, but the other person, and just like the potential of what you guys can be if you mm-hmm. actually work together on these issues, mm-hmm. you know?
What's most important is you recognizing and acknowledging to the other person that it is an issue and you acknowledge that it's an issue yeah. because the fact that you acknowledge that shows that your values around money and what you want to prioritize with money are in a different place. Mm-hmm. I think if you're just in a state of denial or in a state of justification mm-hmm. and trying to justify it to your partner, just like getting them to bail you out or yeah. something like that, then that is where it can be a vicious cycle. But showing that other person that like, this is not where my values lie and I need help getting through this.
Totally. What was the most challenging part, let's say, about breaking free from overspending? Because mm-hmm. I feel like there's so many elements that goes into this. Like, was there one specific thing that you can think of?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the reason it was so hard for so long was because I didn't take it seriously enough or admit mm-hmm. to myself what the real problem was. Like for a long time, I just kept telling myself, oh, I need to just spend less money next month. I'm mm-hmm. not going to buy as many clothes next month. I'm going to set this clothing budget.
Yeah.
But I never actually stuck to it because I never acknowledged the deeper reasons underneath. Mm-hmm. And I think what I realized when I started to take it seriously and what I see in everyone I work with is that shopping is just a coping mechanism for something deeper, whether it's you're using shopping to distract yourself from something else in your life that you need to work on, or yeah. you are experiencing, you know, stress and anxiety at work and shopping gives you a feeling of control. It's always mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. that it's kind of compensating for. And mm-hmm. It took me pausing shopping and like feeling those triggers and feeling the discomfort of not just getting what I want as soon as I wanted it yeah. for me to feel the discomfort of those emotions and realize what they actually were. Because mm-hmm. if you're just covering up those emotions all the time by purchasing and just getting that constant dopamine hit, you're mm-hmm. never actually sitting in that discomfort long enough to yeah. really figure out what it is you really need.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so true. And like, I think back to where it's funny because I was actually talking to my therapist. Now I'm still trying to find a new therapist, but mm-hmm. anyway, he did say something really good. And it was interesting. We had a conversation around money because I've always had really bad anxiety when it comes to money. And it's funny because when I didn't have money and when I was terrible with my spending, I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. Like the care factor wasn't there. And now that I'm in I feel like I'm in a very financially good place. I feel like I'm on a good momentum of like, I've caught up. I'm now like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just trying to be bigger in terms of what I'm doing, and building wealth. And my financial anxiety has actually like worsened with that, mm-hmm. which is so interesting. 'Cause I'm like, I don't necessarily like spending money. I almost feel guilty, which again, I'm like, I definitely have to work on that, the why behind it. But it's interesting. Like, do you find that when now that you're in a better place, mm-hmm. does that like, do you have any money anxiety at all? Like, do you feel guilty now when you do spend money on shopping? Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
I think I understand what you're saying and I relate to it a little bit mm-hmm. of, I think it's a concern of falling back into old habits yeah. or feeling like I need to overanalyze mm. my decision to make sure that I'm doing it, coming at it from a good place.
Yeah.
Like yesterday I just bought some skincare in the Sephora sale and part of me was like cringing a little bit as I checked out because of the amount and the order. But I think that once you build confidence in your habits mm-hmm. and know that you have the ability to reflect and
yeah.
analyze your own decisions, you can be a lot more confident when you do make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And something I experienced once I had really broken that, you know, dopamine filled cycle of shopping was yeah. that now when I do make a purchase, it doesn't give me that like heightened emotional rush mm-hmm. anymore. Like mm-hmm. because that, you know, extreme peaks and extreme valleys of that dopamine feeling were mellowed out. I don't right. experience that kind of rush and that even that low feeling when I'm mm-hmm. when I'm like wanting something and feel like I absolutely have to have it. Like those mm-hmm. feelings are smoothed out now. And nice. I don't like feel like it's this really heightened emotional experience with shopping anymore.
That's good.
But I get what you're saying around the anxiety and wanting to make sure that you maintain those habits because mm-hmm. yeah, like falling back into old routines is mm-hmm. something that can happen. And mm-hmm. I think it's more about like thinking about how you want to view money and yeah. viewing it from an abundance mindset. And I think a lot of us grow up thinking that money is very like hard to come by or mm-hmm. scarce, and like shifting that mindset mm-hmm. into, you know, I can go out and make money for myself. Like,
hell yeah.
I always have the ability to do that and the ability yeah. to control what I do have. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like taking the power back, and money is just like a tool that serves us, not the yes, other way around.
Money is a tool. It's so true. I
yeah.
love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you have grown a very fast and loyal mm-hmm. community online, and that's obviously how I found you and we became online friends. I love yeah. that. But what inspired you to start talking about this online? Because obviously this is like an incredibly, you know, it's a vulnerable topic to mm-hmm. talk about online. Mm-hmm. So like what made you want to like, you know what, I'm going to spread out this message and start chatting on Instagram, TikTok and all the things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think first it was just realizing what opportunities there were online
yeah.
and realizing that, you know, other people who have built success mm-hmm. with online businesses or with content creation are yeah. not, they don't have some special ability that I don't have. It's like, we're all capable of doing these things 100%. If we commit to it. And,
yeah.
You know, I followed you for a really long time back when you were still like in your serving days.
It's
and
crazy.
So I think seeing someone like your age in your city who yeah. like kind of started from like, not started from the bottom,
well,
but like,
no, kind of.
Like just started,
living the regular Vancouver
yeah, like
life.
Like a normal yeah. person who was like not, didn't come have yeah. all this like wealth or means or mm-hmm. opportunities. You know, a lot of people, a lot of influencers you mm-hmm. see, and it's hard to relate to because it is very clear they've, you know, come from the means to be able to kind of ease into it really easily. But
for sure.
seeing someone like work really hard at mm-hmm. it and have success is really inspiring. And so mm-hmm. I think once I started to see that that was possible, it became a real like option.
Yeah.
And in terms of sharing my experience, I think once I had figured out a solution for myself and worked through it on myself, which we can go a bit into what really worked for me to overcome
yeah.
being a shopaholic. But once I made that change for myself, it felt so important for me to be able to bring that solution to other people and
yeah.
in the hopes that it would also help them. And yeah, it was just a really big change in my life that I honestly never thought that I would be able to do. Like I kind of thought that struggling to resist shopping urges and struggling to say no to all of these impulse buys was something that I would always be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And realizing that it doesn't have to be an uphill battle forever, and you can, you know, do things that are hard and become a person that you didn't think you could be. I felt like I had to show that journey to other people. So I just started posting on social media.
I love it. And I feel like that is something that is so cool because I think that when people are as much authentically as they can be online and talking mm-hmm. about their own personal experiences, I feel like that's like really when people connect with you because they yes. can relate to it. Because that's the thing, like, you know, social media this day and age, there's so much of this fluffy, beautiful stuff online. It's not necessarily real. So it is super cool when you see creators talking about their actual like issues and things they've overcome and like helping others do it. I think mm-hmm. it's so cool that we're able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And it's honestly more powerful than, you know, a well thought out, polished, like TikTok video, you know, just sitting down and sharing your story in a way that other people can connect to is mm-hmm. what is so beautiful about social media and being able to build a community. So.
Totally. And speaking of the community that you have built, and you've obviously chatted, you know, whether that be people in your comments, DMs, and in your program yourself too, what is like a big factor that you found that people are, why are people impulse shopping? Mm-hmm. Like, is there for such a wide variety of reasons? Like, is there like any internal findings that you have that mm-hmm. you could share?
Yeah, I think it can be different. The internal part and mm-hmm. like what I talked about before, like what you were using shopping as a coping mechanism for, that mm-hmm. can be different from person to person. But mm-hmm. obviously the external ease of living in a culture of credit cards and debt mm-hmm. being very normalized and buy now, pay later plans and, yeah. you know, oh one God. Click purchase, yeah. like these things make it so easy.
Yeah.
Just serving, like trying to get that action of purchasing as close as they possibly can to your feeling of mm-hmm. wanting an item. That is really why people do it, and not having the tools to be able to recognize and reflect on that urge in the moment and put a speed bump between the impulse and the action.
Yeah.
And so I see a lot of different reasons for some people. You know, they grew up with money being very tight and spending being very controlled in their household, and it yeah. kind of became a form of rebellion for them.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, like I said, work anxiety or mm-hmm. family stress or relationship problems, these things can yeah. spark it. For some people, it's, you know, a big weight loss journey and not fitting into any of their clothes anymore. That can be a big
yeah.
Spark for some people's habits. So mm-hmm. it really depends, but the common thread is really, yeah, that marriage between having something in your own life that you're trying to distract yourself from, yeah. as well as the ease of shopping nowadays.
So. Oh my gosh. Yeah, for sure. In terms of like identifying triggers, like let's say things that you notice about yourself or even for other people, like how can people actually identify their triggers for overspending? Like what does that actually look mm-hmm, like? And mm-hmm. how did you overcome mm-hmm. this?
Yeah. So the big thing that I did when I was ready to really tackle this and take it seriously was doing a no buy. And if you've been on, you know, TikTok or Instagram recently, if you've been on underconsumption TikTok, yeah. you've probably heard of this, but it's basically doing a time bound, rules based, like no spending challenge. Yeah. So for me, I decided to do a 3 month no buy where I wouldn't buy any
3 months. Any I didn't clothes. Even know that. Wow.
Yeah. Any clothes, shoes, accessories. I also added in like any beauty or makeup products mm-hmm. as long as I hadn't, you know, if I ran out of something I used on a daily basis, I would repurchase it. But mm-hmm. I added that on as well. And yeah, so I basically intended to not buy anything in those categories for 3 months. And I think what a mistake a lot of people make with no buys is that they view it as a temporary restriction mm. and like viewing it as a restrictive challenge that they have to try to make it through till the end yeah. and then they're free. And the thing that I think worked really well for me is that I had done a lot of work beforehand to really think about how the way that I viewed my habit was contributing to the habit mm. and realizing that I was in control of my own thoughts and my own like identity around shopping yeah. and being able to shift that as I went into this habit change.
Mm-hmm.
I think we get really locked into these identities around the bad habits that we have. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm not self-disciplined, or mm-hmm. I'm a shopaholic, or I have bad habits with money. And we kind of attach these identities to ourselves around these self-doubting and self-criticizing beliefs. Mm-hmm. And being able to realize that if you just shift that belief, you can step into a new reality. It's like fake it till you make it. Like you have to start believing that new identity is possible for you before you can make it work. So I really went into this no buy with the mindset of like, I am a former shopaholic. Like this is not like really just lying to myself, even if it didn't feel super true at the time, like mm-hmm. being able to adopt that new identity and just believe blindly that on the first day of my no buy, this was behind me, and just telling myself that over and over, even if it felt not true or if there was that little self-doubt voice in the back of my mind.
Yeah. So do you think that people before committing to, because I'm sure that there's people listening now, being like 3 months of no spending, get mm-hmm. real. Mm-hmm. Is there like some recommendation or tips like to figure out what you should maybe do before, let's say even like 1 month of a mm-hmm. no buy? Like, is it like, what kind of like, do you have any tips of work stuff that they should do before mm-hmm. they actually commit to something like this, mm-hmm. like for a challenge?
Yeah. I think number one is identifying your why, like yeah. identifying, obviously you want to get out of debt. You want to stop having clutter. You want to stop having to deconstruct and deal with all the packages and boxes all the time. Mm-hmm. But instead of just thinking about what you want to get away from, what do you want to move towards? Like, what are the things you want to accomplish in your life? Or what do you believe that fixing this habit will enable you to do? Like, you have to find that guiding light, because that's yeah. going to keep you motivated. Mm-hmm. So identifying the why is the first thing, and then setting up the rules for yourself. So what exactly are you not buying? Mm-hmm. Thinking ahead to the period of your no buy, like, do I have any events that I'm absolutely going to need something for? Yeah. Like, thinking ahead really in so detail important. To make yeah. sure that any excuses or loopholes that come up throughout the process aren't going to derail you.
Yeah.
And making that part of your rules. I think also having an accountability system mm. or buddy is really important. For me, like, my partner was able to be that for me. And I was also, you know, like, on my own old personal TikTok, I was like posting a few videos during my experience, but being able to share your reflections and be accountable to someone else, I mm-hmm. think, is a really important part. So having those three things set up before you start,
and yeah.
you know, all the little things of like unsubscribing from promo emails mm-hmm. and unfollowing any influencers that are particularly triggering for you.
Yeah.
Those things can help too.
Yeah. That was going to be like my next question, because I'm curious to know, like, are there those additional tips that you think people should just think about? Like, so whether that be unsubscribing to newsletters and things like that, like, what mm-hmm. really helped you on top mm-hmm. of all the other work that you yeah. were obviously doing?
Yeah. I think it's setting yourself up for the person that you want to be. So mm, if you are,
I love that. Yeah.
If you are like, when you imagine your former shopaholic self, mm-hmm. does she have an inbox full of 50 promotional emails every day? And if that's not the case, then get rid of them. Or something that some of my clients are engaged in are like different shopping Facebook groups, or like God, different relationships wow. with certain sales associates at certain stores who like text right. them when something new comes in.
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to ask yourself, like, does the future version of me that I want to be, mm-hmm. does she have close relationships with right. sales associates? Like yeah. probably not. And so you have to text that person and say like, hey, I am changing this about myself. This is not who I want to be anymore. Like, I'm thank yeah. you for everything you've done for me. But like, it seems scary, but yeah. you really have to invest in that new identity that you want to step into 100%. In order for it to be.
I love possible. That. Like, envisioning like what would your future self do?
Exactly.
Like, who is it that you want to embody? Who do you want to be in a year? Because that's the thing. Like, so much can happen in just 1 year, mm-hmm. and doing all this like work and steps to make it happen, like, you can do it, right? Yeah.
And it's scary. Like, I'm not going to like beat around the bush. Like, yeah. it is scary yeah. to become a new person or leave behind this part of yourself that has been a place of comfort and enjoyment for you. You know, I always get
yeah.
that odd person commenting on my video being like, stop like hating on me for shopping. Like, why are you trying to yeah. kill my one enjoyable part of my life? It's like, mm-hmm. if that's an enjoyable part of your life and it's not causing damage to other areas, like, be awesome. My guest. Yeah. I'm not here to change that.
You're not
for
saying
you.
Don't spend your money.
100%. Yeah. But if, you know, there's this trend on TikTok this past couple of weeks that I saw that's like, needed a hug, but went to the mall instead. And it's like,
oh,
girl
gosh.
In a change room. And to me, like, that kind of stuff now, mm-hmm. I just see it with a new eye. And I think shopping is often really associated with femininity. And so the idea that it can be this really destructive habit is kind of trivialized and
yeah.
not taken super seriously. So recognizing that's not a healthy way to view spending money. And
yeah. And like, we don't see their situations, like,
exactly.
right. Like, we see these like really cute trending audios, like you said, on TikTok or whatever. And like, you're having a bad day, go shopping, whatever. And you don't know what's behind the scenes, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. do they have credit card debt? What is their relationship with money? Do they have terrible money anxiety? Like, you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a good reminder. It's like, you know, just because you see it online, yeah. like, it's you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something one of my past participants in my program said to me, and she used to struggle with with alcoholism. Like, she had been sober for many years. And something she told me was that the difference between other compulsive habits or addictions and shopping is that other habits and addictions make you look worse to other people. You know, like if you're drinking a lot and drunk all the time, or if you're gambling or all these other things, it makes you like look worse in the eyes of other people. Like, it affects how people view you. But with shopping, owning expensive things and having a really nice bag and being able to shop all the time, like it elevates your status to other people. Like, it gives people something to be jealous of about you. And so it's harder to tackle because it's easier to hide.
Oh my gosh. So deep. It's so true. Do you find that, like, because obviously through your program, you're talking to so many, I'm assuming mainly women. I'm just making an assumption here. Do you find that there's usually like multiple things that they're also struggling with that kind of like brings this shopaholic tendency in with it too? Like, do you find that there's other struggles too that kind of come along with it?
There are many people who have dealt with past addictions or past compulsive behaviors, like whether it was substance abuse or, you know, big weight loss journeys, things like that.
Sure.
But in terms of like present day, what they're dealing with, the main thing I find is, which was my experience as well, was an unhappiness with certain areas of their life that they were feeling afraid or incapable of changing. And shopping was an easy way to feel that control and feel put together.
Right.
Something I talk a lot about is the fantasy self. Imagining this like version of ourselves that we want to be when we're shopping. Like, when you're checking out on that dress, you're envisioning yourself like going out to brunch and all these places.
And
you're envisioning this fantasy version of your lifestyle that isn't really you. And I think the reason we tend to do that is to cover up for insecurities or things that we don't like about our lives. And part of dealing with this shopping habit is also dealing with, you know, self-confidence and like building that up and realizing that we can build fulfillment in other areas of our life, even if it feels scary.
Totally. So,
Yeah.
How do you approach spending today? How do you approach shopping? Like, what does that look like? Do you have a specific system? What do you do? Because now that you're obviously like, you've gone through all of this and you've done all the work and you're talking about this online and you're teaching other people, what does it look like now for you?
I am a big proponent of using a wish list. So this is like a non-negotiable to me.
I wanted to get to this because I'm obsessed.
Yes, you have to use a wish list. And why this is so helpful is because it puts that speed bump, like I was saying, between the impulse and the action of buying. I think we can all relate to, you know, buying something on an impulse that a few months later just is sitting in your closet unworn. And that happens a lot with, trends. And so what using a wish list does is you put that item that you want on the wish list. You can see it in the list with all the other things you want. Be like, does this make sense in my closet? Is this something that I can see myself wearing with, you know, many different outfits? And often we'll find that, you know, once you decide to put the pause on something and wait even like a day or 2 days, things that you thought you wanted so badly in the moment, you just don't care anymore. And I used a wish list throughout my no-buy to like obsessively keep track of all the things I saw. And by the end of my no-buy, there was probably like two things on there that
you saw
would even
want to buy. A gradual change. Like, when you were doing that 3 months, like in the beginning, you were adding so much stuff to your wish list. But then towards the end of your third month, you're like, I'm barely even adding things.
Yeah. The first like 3 to 4 weeks, I was really actively like, I was still fighting the urge to like go scroll on the Aritzia website and like go check my favorite brands and adding stuff to my wish list left and right. But after a while, it can get worse before it gets better. Like, that dopamine urge in our brain, like really wants the reward, right? Like, it part of it is neuroscience, like the reason we crave these things. And after a while, it does start to mellow out and subside. But yeah, what I realized was that the vast majority of things that I want in the moment, I will not care about later. And I think something I tell people all the time is, name a single like wardrobe item that has like dramatically changed your life. Like, there isn't any. Even your favorite pair of shoes that you wear every day, like, it doesn't fulfill you. It doesn't change your quality of life. And just remembering that, and remembering there will always be something else to want. Like, if you don't get that one pair of black boots, like, there will be another pair of black boots that you desperately want one day. Yeah. Like, it's not the end all be all.
Mm-hmm. I love that because I feel like I need to add the visual component into my habit, because when I do a similar thing, I literally just have my notes app on my phone, mm-hmm. and I have like, it's essentially like a wish list, but mm-hmm. I just put in the actual link to it. But I do find that helps, because especially when I do find stuff that I'm like, I rarely scroll in terms of like websites anymore. I find that like, I've kind of, that's never been a huge problem for me. Mm-hmm. But I do like to pause my purchases. Like, I'm like, if there's something I'm seeing that I like, I'll keep it on there, and it needs to be there at least for a week. But like, also I'm very intentional in terms of like how I like to spend my money each month. So like, I do allocate like, I do want to get a couple of things, I'll allocate a little bit of spending this month for it. And if it's within budget, cool. If not, oh well, mm-hmm. We can save it. But yeah, I think that just setting, like hitting the pause button, I think is so key when it comes to spending and impulse purchases and all the things that come along with mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. And it feels uncomfortable at first if you're in the habit of just seeing, wanting, buying immediately. You have to sit in that, but it gets easier.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Let's say there's a huge sale. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this happens a lot, and especially if you're subscribed to newsletters and stuff. Like I used to be subscribed to a lot of like fashion newsletters before because I quite like them. I've stopped now because it's just crazy. But like, let's say it is like, I don't know, a week sale or 24-hour sale. Sometimes, you know, it's just super short, but it's a super good sale. Like, what would you say to someone if they are so close to hitting that add to cart? You're like, okay, well, shit, 60% off. Mm-hmm. Like, I can add this into my, you know, wardrobe. I feel like it might fit in. Like, what do you say to them if they like, they're trying to work on this, but they are just so tempted?
Mm-hmm. No, sale shopping is definitely a big vice for a lot of people I work with. And
yeah.
What I say is that we can use sales as a strategy for getting the things that we already want and need, but it shouldn't be reactive. Like our purchase decisions should not be reactive to sales. It should be used as a strategy to spend less on the things that we already want. And so just browsing a sale to find things to buy, mm-hmm. I think is never the right way to go about it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if there's something you want and you're waiting for it to go on sale and that, you know, on Boxing Day, then that's a great time to buy it. Like viewing it as a tool instead of a reason to shop.
Sure. Yeah, that's really smart. And like, I feel like this is definitely where your expertise lie, because you always talk about like shopping your own closet and all that stuff. So what would you say to people who, you know, they just say, and I say this a lot sometimes, depending on the season, but like they have nothing to wear. They've got nothing to wear in their closet. I feel so underwhelmed by what is here and I want to go shopping. I need something fresh. Like, what do you say to them? Like, do you have any tips?
I don't believe you. That is the first thing I say. I don't believe you have nothing to wear. I think that we spend a lot more time scrolling than we do styling what we have in our closet. And what I find is when I am feeling the itch to shop, like honestly right now, I've been feeling it the past couple of weeks, the season transition.
The change of seasons, I feel that.
Has always been the biggest trigger for me. That was always the month where I would spend the most on clothes.
Yeah.
And especially going into spring, you know, we're sick of wearing coats all the time up here in Canada. Yeah,
like same like rotation of sweaters. Yeah.
And so I think there's something really special and valuable in just playing dress up in your own closet. Like set aside an hour on a Sunday and just play dress up, like put together new outfits, try to style something you've never worn. Mm-hmm. Something I do in my program is give like daily styling prompts every single day.
Cool.
So things like, you know, find the oldest piece in your closet and the newest piece in your closet and style them together.
So smart.
You know, wear a belt in a way you've never worn it before, and just finding new ways to reimagine the items you already have.
Yeah.
I think also making sure your closet is a space that you enjoy going into every day. Mm. A lot of us have a lot of things we never wear, pieces that don't fit.
Yeah.
When you open your closet, you don't want to look at that rack of clothes and see a bunch of stuff that you feel like you should wear more or feel guilty that you don't wear more or items that have tags attached. So decluttering, that's something I help people through a lot. And coming at it from the angle of, okay, what are the favorite pieces in my closet? What do I love to wear all the time? What do I treasure? Mm-hmm. If all my clothes got stolen out of my closet, which pieces would I be the most upset to lose? Mm. And then viewing all of the other pieces in your closet from that angle. Like yeah. we should be setting a high standard for the things in our closets because we want to, you know, open up your wardrobe every day and be excited. And,
yeah.
you know, there are going to be days where you feel a little bit less inspired and that's mm-hmm. where you can, you know, turn to Pinterest and yeah. get inspiration from other people. But coming at it from the approach of what do I love to wear? What are like the colors and the mm-hmm. fabrics and all of that? I think we can be really influenced by feeling yeah. like personal style is based on copying other people when it's really not.
And one day, like we actually did love that item and we yeah. hit the add to cart button or we did end up purchasing it because mm-hmm. we were at one point in our lives, whenever we got it, like we were like, okay, this is going to be perfect for the wardrobe.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people, and like, I love that you mentioned styling because I think this is an important process when it comes to figuring out like not just your own style but just like to work with what you have. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend for someone who feel like they don't necessarily have style or they mm-hmm. don't know how to style? What would be like your tips to try to get them to just rejig a little bit and like figure out like what do you think they should do, like mm-hmm. if they just are completely clueless?
Mm-hmm. So the method that I use, I call it the closet club method.
Oh,
and basically what I suggest is like you should treat your closet like it's this exclusive club and you are the bouncer Cute. Of your own closet. So it's more about protecting your closet mm. from like unwanted guests than mm-hmm. it is about figuring out what guests to bring in, right?
Yeah.
And so the first step is you have to identify like what those VIP
oh my gosh.
Those VIPs are in your own closet. So that's like the language I use, like your very important pieces.
I'm obsessed.
Like what I just said, like what are the items that you love the most that like you don't even have to question, like these are, if I had to mm-hmm. only keep 10 pieces in my wardrobe, this is what it would be.
Yeah.
And then getting specific on what it is that you like about them. Like yeah. what is it exactly about that pair of jeans that mm-hmm. you love to wear every day that you like? What exactly is it about those five items that you just decluttered? Like what specifically is it about them that made you not wear them? And getting yeah. really clear on that, because that is how you build personal style. It's mm-hmm. not this like top-down approach where you decide, okay, I'm going to be minimalist preppy. Like that is my style. And so now I need to buy all these things to fit that. It's right. going bottom up and yeah. really analyzing the specifics of what you love and connecting with your authentic preferences, because mm-hmm. we all have them, whether you're a creative person or not, we yeah. all have preferences and things we like to wear.
Absolutely.
So it's about going into your own closet and analyzing what you already love mm-hmm. and then building your style around that, because
yeah.
it's in there. You just have to uncover it. It's not something that you know, outsource For and sure. find externally.
Yeah. And something like now that it's obviously springtime and like we already chatted about, but like trends, I feel like is something, it's something the older I get, the less tempted I am in terms of trends, because like for me, I know what I like to wear now. I have a very boring, neutral, everyday style. Like that's just like my cup of tea. So I don't really fall into a lot of trends, but I know mm-hmm. a lot of people do. Like they see new colors, they see new styles and mm-hmm. they get so freaking excited and they want to be on trend and they want to try something new. And I get it. Like especially now with like the whole like butter yellow situation, I'm actually kind of obsessed. And like now we have tulips in front of us. That's my coping mechanism for trend colors. But what would be some tips in terms of like, let's say someone is really tempted to try a new trend. What should they do? Like, what are some ways that they can incorporate trendy items, but not breaking their budget, not breaking their bank or going into further credit card debt if they have any? Mm-hmm.
I think the most important question to ask yourself when mm-hmm. you're thinking of buying a trend or taking part in a trend
yeah.
is really visualizing where that item will be in your wardrobe a year from now.
Mm,
I think mm-hmm. with a lot of things, especially now that the trend cycle is so fast
so
with
fast.
Social media and yeah. things seem to go in and out of style really quickly.
Yeah.
If you imagine that trend is completely out of style a year from now, no one's wearing it anymore. All the influencers, you don't see it on social media mm-hmm. anymore. Like it's kind of cringy even to be seen in it. Would you still want to
wear
it? And
yeah.
If the answer to that question is no, then it's probably not your authentic style.
That is such a good question. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah.
That's a really great way to like look at that. Actually, yeah. I've never thought about it that way, but that's actually super, super yeah. strong. That's
and even to think about a trend that's out of style right now that you yeah. would never want to be seen in. Like imagine this item you're thinking about becomes like that.
Yeah. That's yeah. crazy. Yeah. No, I like that. So switching gears into like, now we've talked a lot about fashion. We've talked a lot about like wardrobe and upkeep. And I feel like we're having great conversation around all that. I would love to kind of tap into your relationship with money now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would you describe it to be? Like, is it super healthy? Are you like, let's say, you know, through all of the work that you've done, like, do you feel like you're healed? Mm-hmm. Like, but what does this look like?
Yeah, I don't have any credit card debt anymore. So I definitely was able to put a lot of more money towards that as I came out of my no-buy. And so I don't have any credit card debt anymore. I have like a few $1,000 of student loans that I'm still chugging away at, but honestly, there's no interest on them. So it's really not a priority.
Minimum payment.
Yeah. So I feel really good from a debt perspective, and I really don't see myself ever going into credit card debt again. Mm-hmm. I really come at debt with the attitude of like, it's not a crutch to be able to pay for things you want. Like if you want something, you should save up for it. It's not like you should put it on credit card and then find ways to pay it off after. Yeah. So that is how I have changed my relationship to debt. But in terms of money overall, like budgeting, which you are the queen of, obviously, being able to budget every month. And I think especially when you are like in a serious relationship, like live with your partner, doing that together is really important, whether or not you have separate bank accounts or not, like being able to have those financial goals together and budget together and make intention with that as a couple is really important. But whether you're in a relationship or single, I think budgeting is so important. And really knowing like what you want your money to do for you, like what are the bigger goals that you're working towards? Yeah. Because when we don't have that, it's really easy to just view everything with this in the moment, you know, YOLO, it doesn't matter what I do with my money kind of perspective. So
this kind of goes back to like that why that you mentioned earlier, because this is something I talk about a lot too, is I think that when it comes to budgeting, it has, you know, a little bit of a bad rep in terms of like, it's like this restrictive way of looking at your money and whatnot. But like, to me, I always say like, don't just focus on like the micro aspect of it, like zoom out. What is your why? What is the reasoning for why you're budgeting? Why are you, you know, what is the purpose? Do you want to retire early? Do you want to travel more? Do you want to be able to, I don't know, shop more, but like responsibly, like what does that look like for you? And I feel like that's really important to figure out for that to be successful. When did you start budgeting? Like, was this something that was like kind of was incorporated with the whole, like, you know, you becoming more responsible and like not shopping as much? Like, was that just kind of part of the whole process or have you tried doing it before? Like, what was that?
So the funny thing is that I actually used a monthly budget for like many years while I still was a shopaholic and just didn't stick to it. Yeah. Like every month I would make my budget and feel like I had a plan, but there was always that voice in my head that kind of knew that I wouldn't succeed. And so I, you know, would be great for the first week and then it would just fall off and I would end up spending hundreds of dollars more than I had planned on clothes typically. And so I think while budgeting is like the key tool, you also have to have the mindset to go with it. And
you can't just do one.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have the mindset and the intention and the why, like you said. And so obviously I still budget now, but now I actually do stick to it and do have those bigger goals that can help guide where I'm assigning those dollars each month. Because before it was just, it felt completely arbitrary. I didn't know. And you know, part of that is getting a bit older too. Like when you're in your early 20s, it's hard to imagine like buying a home or like having a wedding or these bigger financial goals when you're that young. So I think part of it is, kind of
coming into
this new chapter of your life.
100%. What has been like the biggest reward for you since like all of these new incredible habits have formed into your life? Like what has been like the biggest piece that you just like value so much with all this change?
That's such a good question. I think being able to spend money in ways that would have made me feel anxious before, but now because I have the balance and security without debt and without this cloud of this overspending habit hanging over me, I can, you know, spend money generously and unexpectedly at times in ways that align with my values without having that anxiety over me. Like 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was a friend's birthday and she was like having a really hard time, and I think her birthday kind of brought up some like tough feelings, and she was just having a really bad day. And just spur of the moment, I like took her out to this like nice dinner, and we went out and had this pretty expensive dinner, and it was just kind of unexpected. It wasn't in the budget, but because I didn't have you know, the weight of debt and the weight of this shopping problem over me. It didn't have to be this concerning thing. And I think just having that flexibility is really the most important. And I'm sure that you've experienced that too. I know on your Mexico trip, you had
a couple
of things that were just out of the blue. But yeah, being able to be generous and like have experiences that you wouldn't be able to have if you had debt hanging over you.
I so agree. And I feel like that is like one of those things that I really appreciate and value when it comes to having money and flexibility, just like in terms of like how you spend your money and because you're wise and smart with it. Like, it's just like the able to give and like, whether it be spoiling friends or family or just giving back in any type of way. I feel like those are the moments where I'm like, I feel so good about it. And it's so cool to be able to be in a position where you can do that. I would love to know, because this is like, it's one of those questions, because I feel like it's different for everyone, but like, what does wealth and success mean for you? Like what is that?
I think it means being able to live the life that you want to live. Like having money, you don't have money just for the sake of having money. Like, money is a tool that enables you to do the things you want to do and build the life that you want to live. And I think we put so much weight on just like the number in your bank account or the material things that you could buy with the things that with the money that you make. But it's really about enabling you to do the work that you want to do, have the flexibility that you want to have, live where you want to live. Like, it's, it creates opportunities. And I think whatever that dream life is for you, like that is what wealth and success is to me. And that can look so different for different people.
Totally. Yeah, I feel you. I feel like the flexibility and just like being in control and having autonomy over your own life is like, what more can you ask for?
And honestly, you know, some people are fulfilled and really want to have a secure 9-to-5 job. Some 100%. People want to be entrepreneurs, like or content creation like we are, or, you know, some people want to have a cabin in the woods or live in a penthouse in the city. Like, it's really about what is the life that you want to create and how can you use your money more wisely and also make money in a way that aligns to that.
Totally. And I would love to know, like, talking about like, because obviously we're both like in that entrepreneurial world and we've left the 9-to-5 crazy world. Are you currently in a season of playing it safe, or are you making bold moves in your life, career? What does it look like? Where are you at right now?
I would definitely say the past year has been bold moves. It's honestly been kind of crazy. I had this weird vision or prediction when I was like in my early 20s that when I turned 30, it would be like my year of thriving. Like, I would be at my peak. Not to say that it's downhill from here, but I just always had this vision that like when I was turning 30, I would be like in my prime. And I feel like I manifested that a little bit. Like, I'm getting married this year. I'm turning 30 in like 3 months.
And
I started this business that has opened up a lot of opportunities and a new direction for me. And, you know, doing my no buy and getting over my shopping problem was such a necessary first step to be able to do that, because seeing myself be able to do something that I never thought I could do, suddenly it broke down this like mental block that I had around so many other things. Like, oh, if I could do that, then what else could I do that I've been telling myself I couldn't do that seemed impossible?
Totally.
And so it's so powerful, not just for getting your spending in check, but like opening up a realm of your life and a realm of, you know, confidence and self-trust that maybe you couldn't access before.
100%. And it's an important reminder too, that like, you know, people may look at you and like your business, your career, like whatever it is that you're doing, that, you know, they see that success and they see where you're at now, but it's like all that hard work and all the stuff that you did before that to get to this point. Like, that's the work that has to get done. Like, nothing happens overnight. And I feel like that's a, you know, something that it gets thrown at us a lot in the online space is like, people want that instant quick success, but like, that's just, I mean, for most people, it's not realistic. And to create something sustainable and meaningful, like, it's going to take a while, right?
Yeah. And just because someone is successful, like, doesn't mean they don't deal with all of that. Like, I am such an overanalyzer. Like, I have to, sorry, I should stop telling myself I'm an overanalyzer because I have to shift that identity. But like, even with success and even with being at a point that I just never imagined I would be at a year ago, I still like question myself all the time. I still am afraid of feeling at something. I still like overthink and overanalyze or feel like I'm not doing things well enough. Like, it's always something that you have to work on. And as long as you commit to yourself to learn and trust that if you mess up and fail at something, like, you will be okay and you can figure it out. Like, building that self-trust to know that you can handle it if something goes wrong is so important.
So important. And just, like, that needs to be my mantra.
So important. And like, setting the goal being learning something as opposed to getting this many views or making this much money from this thing or getting this type of response. Like, the goal is learning something so you can do better the next round.
Oh, so good. Mm-hmm. And what's next for you, Hannah? And what's next for the style audit? Like, do you have anything exciting that's coming up that you want to share? Or like, what's going on with you this year? Like, I'd love to hear. I mean, besides obviously getting married, which is super exciting.
Well, I'm running my program right now. We're in a new round with a new group of people, which is really exciting to be guiding them through the no-buy process. But over the next few months, you know, I plan to keep working on and expanding and developing this program until it can be the best it can be and, you know, bringing in more people into it. And then I have, you know, a few other ideas up my sleeve of other helpful resources and products and things that I think can really help people who are trying to shop less. So I have some things up my sleeve. But right now I'm just really focusing on, you know, my community and my audience and like, giving everyone those helpful tips and bringing people through my program.
I love that. I'm sure that you also find it super rewarding too. Like, I love doing my calls, for example, because actually being able to connect with people one-on-one is so cool. Because obviously when you talk to people in the online space on social media, it's a little bit different versus like actually having an interactive conversation with them over Zoom or wherever you do it. I'm sure that you really love being able to connect with your community in that way.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being able to share my experience with them and relate to them, because the thing with shopping and having a spending problem is people feel very alone in it and they feel like they're the only one who has this particular vice or has this particular
secret.
Reason behind their shopping, or has they're the only one who has that much credit card debt. But what is so valuable about being in a group is that people see that it's not just them.
Totally.
And so it's nice to be able to share that with other people and make them feel less alone in it.
I love that. Any quick final tips for anyone who's struggling, want to get out of the cycle of overspending, but they just feel stuck? Like, what would be like your biggest final tip for them?
Start calling yourself a former shopaholic. Like, you really have to accept that this is a new reality that you want to step into. It's not, doesn't always have to be a struggle. It might feel like that at the beginning, but prioritizing changing your thoughts and catching yourself when you are in that thought of, oh, just one more item. I just need this one more thing and then I'll be done. Or this one shirt will make my wardrobe feel complete. Or what's a little bit more credit card debt? Like, catching yourself in those moments and being like, wait, what is that thought? Like, you have to become so self-aware of the thoughts you're having. And, you know, I can't recommend like journaling, or even if it's just like a notes app in your phone, like when you're having those thoughts or you find yourself even being self-critical, like, oh, I have no discipline. I'm just going to buy five more things because I just failed once. Like, you have to be able to be self-aware of your thoughts and really analyze them. And that's really the key to resolving any, whether it's a bad habit that you have or building a new life for yourself or, you know, starting a business, whatever it is, it's like you have to change the way that you talk about yourself and talk to yourself.
For sure.
That's really the key.
So important. And if listeners have just one thing that they can take away from this awesome conversation that we've had today, what would that be?
Oh man, don't let the obstacle, don't let your obstacle in your life be yourself. Because I think so it's so easy to blame our parents or our education or social media or whatever it is for the parts of your life or the behaviors that you have that are causing you, you know, causing negative aftermaths in your life. It's so easy to blame it on other things. And what I like to say is, it might not be your fault, but it is your responsibility to change it. And don't let yourself be the reason that you stay stuck.
Oof, Mic drop. Boom. That's amazing.
Hard truths.
I love it. That's good. Okay. Amazing. Thank you so much, Hannah, for coming on to the Balanced Pursuit podcast. This was such an amazing conversation to have with you. And I hope that listeners enjoyed this, learned a bunch, got some fancy, amazing new tips. And again, if you guys obviously want to find her, she's at the Style Audit online, and you have so many amazing things going on over there. I'm a huge fan of everything that you're about and what you're doing. So thank you so much again for coming on. This was amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a good conversation. And yeah, like I said, pinch me moment. I love to be able to talk about this stuff. And if you would love to see more or feel like you relate to anything that we talked about in this conversation, come give me a follow on Instagram or TikTok and join the crew.
Join the good side of social media. Yes. That's what I like to call it.
Yes. The anti-influencing side exactly. of social media.
All right. Amazing. Well, thanks so much. And we'll see you later anyway.
Bye.
Bye.